Today on Almost Paradise in North Idaho, we're taking you halfway around the world to the hills, the streets, and the sacred sites of Israel through the eyes of a married couple who just returned from their lifelong dream trip. And what makes their story so compelling is not just where they went, but how differently they experienced it. Two people, the same trip, yet shaped by two very different impressions. And that's the beauty of their story. Today we'll hear how both perspectives, one that leans towards the historical and geopolitical, and the other that was more spiritual, came together to paint a fuller picture of what it means to stand on holy ground. Stay with us. This is a good one. Hi, everyone, and this is Ted Ludlam, and this is Almost Paradise in North Idaho. And welcome, and thank you for hitting the play button. I really appreciate that. We're up here in North Idaho, about 30 miles from the Canadian border, where it is wet. Lots of rain. It's been in the mid-upper 40s, generally speaking, and it's the precursor to winter. It is coming. So even though we're not having 70 degrees and sunny skies, we're not having snow either. So that's on the horizon, I'm sure. You look up in the mountains and you can see it. But today I have a guest, and I know people enjoy it when I have guests because that means I don't talk so much. So that's a good thing. So today we have Larry and Chris Clark, and Larry is the wife of Chris. Larry has an interesting first name, which we may not get into, but anyway, that's the way it works, and you'll figure it out as we get into the podcast. And they were on a few weeks ago talking about their upcoming trip to Israel, and they have since returned. They survived. I think it was more of a challenge for Chris to survive the trip than it was for Larry, maybe, physically, and we'll get into that a little bit. But they are back, and they feel just bursting at the seams to share what they experienced, what they saw, how they may have changed a little bit. So I'm going to turn it over here real quick and kind of see what they have to say and what they have to share. So, guys, thank you for being here.
Well, thanks for the invitation, Ted. We thought once was enough, but two is even better. Twice the fun.
Twice the fun. That's right. That's right. So, since nobody listened to the first one, maybe they'll listen to this one. Chris, you kind of wanted to maybe visit a little bit about, you know, all of the funny things that fell into place, almost like a God thing, that made this trip possible. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, I would like to share some of the details of how it all got put on the schedule and walked out. It's kind of crazy. I'm not sure when we began to have a burden to go to Israel. Do you remember, Larry?
It's been in the last year, I think.
Yeah, and we heard of a group with a big church in California that went on a regular basis. And so we approached them and to find out when they might be going again. And we were told that they probably weren't going to schedule another trip. And that was fine. You know, we settled back in. I have known for over a year that I needed to have a hip replacement, and we had made the decision that we were going to get through the summer and enjoy our summer before the surgery and take care of that issue in September. In about mid-July, it was, what the heck are we doing? Why am I waiting and just going through the summer in pain? I think that we need to get this scheduled as quickly as possible. So called the doctor's office, told them to get me on the surgery schedule as quickly as possible. And the next following Monday, I got a call from the orthopedic surgeon. He said he could get me in on July the 30th. And the very next day, believe it or not, the church called and said, we have openings for a trip to Israel in mid-October.
Because originally it was booked up.
It was totally full.
Full.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, an opening happened.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Two openings, so I could take my wife.
Oh, well, that was convenient.
So you can't travel after surgery for 6 weeks. So it worked out in the timeline just perfect. Had the surgery on the 30th of July and began the rehab. and made plans to go to Israel. Now, I got to tell you, it is an Israeli adventure. And so there's always that component that you're concerned about, how you're going to pay for it. And the amazing thing was, my family has for a long time had oil lease, or what they call those, royalties on some oil-producing ground in North Dakota. And my grandmother and grandfather's estate had never been probated, and they have a royalty interest in some property. And a cousin of mine finally probated their estate and got the oil revenues released, and he distributed them to all the family members. And we got our check, and lo and behold, it was just the right amount to cover the entire cost of the trip.
Well, that's amazing. I can't imagine anything falling into place better than that.
Well, sometimes when all of these things align, you've got to just step back and become obedient and walk out the rest of it. And that's kind of the way we saw it. And so we committed and we prepared and we went.
Now, Larry, did you feel the need to talk him into this, especially with the surgery, to maybe clear the weight of the possibility? Or did he have to talk you into it? Or was it just totally an equal deal?
Oh, I'm always ready to go.
Yeah, okay.
So,
you were surprised at how quickly it all came together.
How quickly it did come together. I was surprised with the surgery date and how quickly you did recoup from that. Needs a note. It was difficult from time to time, but he did recuperate very quickly, and it all fell into place. And I love adventures. I love stepping out in God and doing things that sometimes can be a little scary, but this just seemed to be so preset. Like, it's like, this is the way you need to walk in it. And we take the next step and the next step and the next, and we found ourselves in Israel by the time we got done doing the steps.
Wow, that's amazing. Tell me, go ahead, Chris.
Well, I was just going to add one more thought to you. The day after my surgery, or the Sunday after my surgery, Larry was on the worship team at our local Limitless Church. And the guest speaker was Danny Carroll, who was leading the trip to Israel. And after church, Danny approached Larry and asked her if she would be the worship leader for the trip.
And what does that exactly mean for our listeners?
Well, what I ended up doing was doing worship 2 to 3 times.
That means?
Singing with my, taking a guitar, all the things that go with it, and the music, and all the accompanying items that are necessary, and preparing song lists for different locations, which we had over the 12, 14 days that we're there. Sometimes I was doing worship a couple times a day, sometimes 3 times a day. We'd have evening meetings. So there was a lot of preparation, and it was just the guitar and I and the 48 other people that were with us on the trip getting to do worship in the places that Jesus stood.
Did you ever imagine you'd have that opportunity?
No. No, that's one of the things that I have to keep pinching myself, saying, you are here, you are worshiping God in the place where Jesus himself stepped, and I still haven't taken it all completely in like I hoped to, which I don't know that I ever will, but it was a glorious experience. But was work. It was a lot of work, too.
Yes, I'm sure it was, especially maybe for Chris.
And nothing helped.
Chris had to carry the mic or the guitar around. Yes?
Yeah, a lot of.
Yeah, I mean, there were others on the trip that could see that I was laboring, and they would take it for certain portions of the walk. Everything we experienced in Israel, every site is a walk-in site. So there were days we put 8 miles on in a day, no less than 5 miles. So we were walking all the time.
Now, did the doctor tell you to be careful, or did he not know?
Well, he probably didn't know.
He didn't, yeah.
But I'd done my time and done my rehab and felt like I was prepared. But it was truly the test. And God was gracious. I mean, I don't know how many sets of stairs we climbed, but there were everywhere we went. Because what you're seeing in 2025, the ruins of certain locations, the actual remnant or ruins of what Jesus saw when he was on the earth are down probably, I don't know, 20, 30 feet below the surface, just because civilization moves on. They continue to build. And so everywhere we went, whether it was the ruins, the tombs, the birthplace, they're all down lots of stairs.
And I'm sure the steps were very evenly spaced with a nice, it was a nice handrail, right?
Well, I know during my therapy, I would use a 5-inch step in exercise, then a 6, then a 7, then an 8, but I never saw a 12, 15, or 18. And a lot of the rough cut hewn stones were totally irregular. But needless to say, God was gracious.
He never took a noser, never fell. A noser.
I like that. We don't want no nosers around here. Now, some people say that the airplane trip can be challenging, too.
Well, the airplane trip was, you know.
How many hours was that in the air?
Putting your butt in a seat for 16 hours is a long time. We left on a Tuesday and arrived in Tel Aviv on a Wednesday morning. So it was quite a flight, and we just kind of dragged ourselves off the plane, grabbed our luggage, threw it in the bottom of a bus, and we started our tour.
Okay. And I did worship within the first hour or 2 hours that we arrived in Tel Aviv. I had my guitar out, and we were in an amphitheater, and I did worship for the first.
Now, that's amazing.
Full day.
To further add to the uniqueness of this trip, it was like just a few days before you left that the ceasefire between Hamas and Israel was announced and began.
And the return of the prisoners was the day before we arrived, I believe the first return of these captives, Hamas captives.
Yes, yes.
Was the day before.
So the mood of Israel was?
Well, it was jubilant and joyful. There were still many posters of the hostages that were hung on balconies and along the roadside. But for the most part, the people were joyous. There seemed to have been a weight lifted. And one of the things that our tour guide said, amazingly, was that we were the first tour group that he had since the October 8th Hamas attack.
2 years earlier.
23. So for 2 years, all tourism just stopped because Israel had become a war zone. And so it was amazing. And we went to every site on our agenda or on our itinerary, and we were pretty much the only group there.
And it was,
It was amazing.
Great time to go because we didn't fight crowds anywhere.
No,
that's just boggles the mind.
Yeah, it was so.
Absolutely. There were people on our trip that had been there before and had, and they talked about hours long wait in line to see some of the religious sites. And, you know, like the crypt where Jesus was slain. Like Golgotha,
the Roman Sepulchre, thing.
All of those places were so overrun with tourists and tourist buses that the waits were hours just to get in to see the same things that we parked the bus and walked right into. It was amazing. It was just like the land had been prepared for our arrival.
And what was the weather like?
85 every day, sunshine. We got another 2-week extension in our summer.
Oh, that's good. Because this would have been the middle of October, September.
Yeah. October 14th through the 26th.
Right.
Something. Yeah, it is very dry over there right now. I see that they're supposed to get rain tomorrow. I still keep track of what the weather's like since we left. It's like I know how much they need rain. They really do. And it didn't rain the whole time we were there. I enjoyed it. It was beautiful weather. But
now you did a lot of walking, obviously standing in biblical locations that you've read about and prayed about and studied. How did that reshape or deepen your understanding of the particular story that may have related to those places you were at?
Well, you know, it definitely makes you think in a much deeper way. And it causes you to, when I saw how far Jesus had to walk, we started in the north.
Sea of Galilee, Capernaum.
Up in the Jordan River Valley. And he, the distances they walked.
It'd be like going from here to Sandpoint.
Oh, yeah, at least. I mean, it was for just walking to get to Jerusalem.
There was no Uber.
Nazareth.
Yeah.
And just...
No.
Yeah.
So that was kind of humbling in itself.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And I don't know, there was just, you could sense a piece of God so strongly that it helped you be able to be more one-on-one through the Holy Spirit with Jesus. And it helped you to just grab a hold of deeper truths that maybe they've never even thought about before, because you were actually seeing the conditions and the place where he was at. I guess one of the things that stood out to me the most was it was the most chaotic, confused, contentious kind of place when you go in, because so much going on. You have all the different factions, from Islam to the Jewish sites to the Christian side. I mean, it's just always kind of like the turmoil. But you have the peace of God. Was so tangible, it was so present, it was so there, that everything, even though it was kind of confusing and chaotic, you just walked in the peace of God. And I found that so amazing, from the Wailing Wall to the places we went up north, like Caesarea Philippi. It was just the peace, especially when we went up to Jerusalem, the peace of God. You could feel how special that place was. And you could feel God's love for it, even in the midst of all the chaos. I found that really just something that was, I'm still having difficulty totally comprehending.
You never felt threatened? No danger?
No.
They were looking over your shoulder?
None.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, and maybe it's just because we're stupid. I don't know about
trusting. Very trusting.
You looked over your shoulder and you saw the tar anyways.
It's had a backfire. No, from the very beginning, we knew it wasn't a holiday trip. We had been forewarned that we weren't going to be in Israel because of the turquoise blue water and sandy beaches.
You didn't bring a swimsuit?
Well, we did show
up.
We swam in the Dead Sea and floated, and we got water baptized again in the Jordan River, and so we were prepared.
Now, those had to have been moving experiences.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so what might have been like three or four of the most moving experiences that you encountered while there, between the two of you or whatever, individually?
Larry?
Well, the baptism in the Jordan River was a pretty moving experience. I kept thinking about maybe Jesus' DNA is still in this water, and I'm getting to go down underneath.
That's a little catch on your toes.
And we did worship there, too. So I was worshiping in my white robe. I felt like an angel with my guitar before we went in. Before we went in to get baptized. And never the whole group, we were there by ourselves. In this whole big place when you go down and...
Where normally there might be hundreds.
The rain and light. And we just... So we got to do our own worship time, which is special. And after we got baptized. And it was just... You got to individually begin to know. Because this was the day after we got there. We got there the first day. And then the next day, we ended up going to the Jordan River. And he had baptized and gone up to the north. And I really... would say that if you're going to do a trip, it's so much better to start in the north and go to the south, because the north is more like North Idaho. It's much more hillbilly country up north around Nazareth, Galilee. I mean, it's the hill peak. It's the hilly part.
It's country.
It's country.
It's country. It's not the big cities aren't up there.
No. And so, you know, that was a quite an overwhelming experience for both of us. And getting baptized and with people we know, and we got to know everybody that was in the group a whole lot better because of that as well, being so close to the beginning of our trip. And the other one was when we went to Caesarea Philippi, which was where Jesus took his disciples a couple weeks before he was crucified to show them what they were coming up against when it came to the demonic. And that set that was there, or the set that was in the Chosen, where they, it's kind of a pagan worship kind of place, was patterned after where we were at, where there's carvings and stuff in the wall. It used to be a place of Baal worship. And we sat down below and did worship. And there were a lot of Islamic people there because it's a holy place for them as well. And people were just touched with the understanding of what we come against when it comes to the satanic and his desire to destroy. And Jesus wanted his disciples to know that because he knew he wasn't going to be there that much longer. And there was just such a sense of that as we were there. And then our pastor, Danny, would speak in all these places. So we would get a little teaching and we'd have worship. And so it was so impactful for our group. There were many people that were so impacted at that place during that time. We're just sitting outside. People are walking by. Some people stop and listen for a while. And all these places that we go, there was always someone from the outside group would come in and ask what was wrong. That was pretty exciting because it was more than just for us. It was for everybody that was around us as well.
Just to add to that, the first day we stopped at Caesarea, which is a coastal town built by King Herod, and it had the Colosseum and a giant amphitheater. That was the first place Larry played worship. And we were sitting in this ancient amphitheater, you know, on the stone seat.
That's been dug out of the ground.
And so Larry's leading worship, and we can look across the amphitheater, and there's two couples that make their way. They're obviously tourists, and they're looking.
They're not with your group.
Not with our group. And slowly, as Larry's leading our group in worship, they slowly kind of begin to edge their way towards us until pretty soon they're right next to Larry, and they're joining in our choruses and worshiping. And so after that all shuts down, and Pastor Danny talks to them, and they're two couples from Germany that are on a tour of Israel and the Holy Land. And the one gal says, well, can we lead you in a worship chorus? And she takes Larry's
guitar.
And she led us in a worship chorus.
In German, which is not very pretty.
But just to show you the info, what we were doing in these various places was not only impacting our hearts, but also others that were in the proximity, I guess. So,
yeah, because we related. Our guide, whose name was Aaron, and was like, we related to how Germany was another one of the nations that was very detrimental, let's say, to Jewish people.
Oh my gosh.
And it's almost like after getting the hostages back the day before, within a couple days before, and then this couples from Germany, it was like a reconciliation kind of thing almost. Because they loved the Lord and they worshiped in spirit and truth. And it was an amazing thing for them to come over and our group to say, well, you guys do a worship song. And so then, okay, we will. And it was just like a special beginning to the trip. That was a beginning to the freaking song.
Chris, go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, so the trip wasn't a recreation and rest. It was really a pilgrimage. And it was a pilgrimage to our Christian roots. And that's really what we went to see. We went to see and have all of our senses filled with our faith, you know. So much of our walk is a walk of faith. And I'm not saying it's mental, but we have to see these things in our mind's eyes. And we have to feel them touch our hearts. But what we went to experience was the reality of touching and seeing and sensing and smelling and adding all of those ingredients to our faith, which it causes it, I think, to become more solid and secure Now when we read the scripture and it says that Jesus rowed out in the boat on the Sea of Galilee, we were standing on the Sea of Galilee. We went to visit
You were standing on the Sea of Galilee?
Well, wow. No, he did.
Yeah, he poured water on the deck.
Oh, okay. Then I just wanted to clarify that.
I did worship there, but it was inside the boat.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
We're repeating the things that our Savior did, and that's just absolutely amazing. So
Larry shared a couple of really touching, sentimental points. Do you have any that were kind of different from what Larry experienced that you could share that were really impactful?
The really impactful part of the trip for me was Jerusalem. Jerusalem is just an amazing place. I mean, it is unlike anything I've ever seen in the world. It is such a political mess. You walk into it and it's like chaos. Israel's not a big country. 260 miles from top to bottom, 71 miles wide at its widest point, less than 9 miles wide at its narrowest point with the Mediterranean Sea. And what bulges into the country? I mean, if the country were just geographically down the Jordan River, it would be larger, but there's this west bank that extends from Jordan into Israel, and it's just a political nightmare. It's controlled by three different organizations. The Israelis occupy a third of it. The PLO, you've heard of them, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, they control a third of it, and then they have dual control over the third section. And you just scratch your head and you go, how in the world does this all work out? And then there's Jerusalem. And Jerusalem, the old city, has four quarters. So you've got the Christian quarter, the Jewish quarter. You've got the Armenian quarter. You've got the Muslim quarter. And they're all cohabitating in this ancient city. And it's mind-blowing how a minefield it can be. And yet they make it work. And in the old city of Jerusalem, you'll find Muslims walking next to Jews, next to Armenians, next to Christians. You don't hear about any of that in the news. All you hear about is that they're always fighting with each other. But no, they cohabitate together. But they go back to their quarters in the evening, and that's where they live. So they aren't assimilating exactly, but they are cohabitating.
So, Larry, you had an additional sense of responsibility. I'm not going to say burden, but it was just a bit of a weight because you had to or felt obligated to lead everybody in some worship and singing with your guitar, whereas Chris didn't have that, okay? He was supportive, but you had to do it, okay? You had to step up. So how did that affect your overall experience?
It definitely caused me to have to rely upon the Lord for input, and the group of people that we ended up going with were such a blessing to me because they were so supportive. They weren't like what my mind had told me beforehand, that, oh, you're going to have to deal with all these Californians and they're probably going to have a really high standard, and am I going to be able to meet that standard? That wasn't the case. They so embraced me and embraced our style of worship, because evidently it was pretty close to what theirs was as well. And I did have a little stress concerning, you know, the preparation and that, but I had spent a lot of time with the Lord beforehand and getting things together and ready, and so I had made myself ready in a lot of ways, and the rest of it was up to God. And I kept telling him, it's up to you how these people respond, and it's up to you, it's not up to me. I'm just gonna listen the best I can and prepare the best I can and handle the things that come up. I tried to be prepared for a lot of different things that might come up, so I ended up sewing a bag to carry the guitar in these narrow little tiny places that you could not get through with a full guitar case, and yet I wanted to protect the guitar as well. But for the most part, I was just so blessed to be able to do that and to stand in those places, like I said before, and worship God. And the people responded so sweetly and to me and to the Lord. There was just something that happened between all of us. It was even hard to leave, even though I'd never met any of these people before in my whole life. By the time the trip was over, we felt like we were just as much one of them as we were our church body here at home. And it was just an amazing sharing of being with God together in God's special place, and how special that place is because it was the place God chose to have Jesus come to earth, grow up with, and will return to.
Now, that's fascinating. Chris, you mentioned in a moment before we had the microphones on something about how Israel felt like home. Explain that.
Well, I'm not even sure I can explain it. You know, you travel for 16 hours and thousands of miles to a place you've never been. You step off the plane, and it does not feel like a strange place. It's, we're in Tel Aviv, we're going to Haifa, we're going to the Sea of Galilee, and all of those. It could almost be like, well, we're going to Sandpoint, or we're going to Grangeville, or we're going to South Idaho or the Weezer. These are places all that are familiar to us. Why are they familiar to us? Well, they're because they're in the book, and we've read about them, and we've seen the events that have taken place there. The first stop we had was at Caesarea on the Mediterranean Sea, a beautiful seaport. We read in the scriptures in the New Testament where that's where Peter went to visit Cornelius and where the Holy Spirit fell upon the Gentiles for the first time. And so as we walked that ground, it was like, oh, yeah, well, okay. Yeah, I feel like I've been here before. Because we've been there before in the Spirit, in faith, as we've read the truth that comes from the Word of God. And it was just amazing. You asked us if we were ever fearful. No more fearful than I am in my own backyard. It was just, this is very familiar and feels like it might not be home, but it's certainly been a place we have spent time before, and it was familiar.
And maybe to give my audience a little more perspective and so on, Chris, you used to be a pastor. And so you've read about this, you've preached about this, you've taught about this for how many years?
Many.
Yeah, and so now, that's why it felt like home.
And I think that if there was a new awakening, the new awakening was not the familiarity of the names of the places, but actually their geographic placement in the nation of Israel. So where Jesus spent most of his time in his 33 years, which was around the Sea of Galilee, that's in the northern part of a country. And so that, just like Larry talked about, for him to go from there to Jerusalem at least three times a year for the celebrations, he had to walk from that location. We took a bus.
You know, and it's still a ways.
Yeah, it's still a ways. But he walked, he hiked the whole thing to find out the location of the Mount of Olives and the Garden of Gethsemane in relation to where Jerusalem was. Those were all pieces of the puzzle that fell together to complete the whole picture.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, Larry, did you sense God speaking to you in any particular way, maybe through a moment of quiet or scripture or something that you witnessed?
Well, I had the first night when we went up into Jerusalem. To me, just going into the city was such a change in the spiritual temperature almost. It's like you're going up and you do feel closer, I think, to God. And that night I'd had a little thing happen. And the next day when we were in the Garden of Gethsemane after we had on the Mount of Olives, and then we went there for some worship and prayer time. And like I said, we were all alone in there. And God revealed to me that the thing that I had experienced the first night that we were in our hotel there in the city of Jerusalem was him showing me that no matter what had happened or transpired in our life or my life, that he had the ability to make it just like it never happened. He had the ability to take anything and make it new again and make it like it never happened. And would I trust him and be able to step out in the things he was asking me to do for the rest of the trip? And it kind of changed the way I looked at worship and changed the way I looked at just some of the people. And it was just an amazing concept of knowing that he was going to make all things new and that he had the power to take those things that had affected my life poorly and badly throughout my whole life. And if I would let him, he would make them just like they never happened.
Wow. That's amazing.
So that was one thing that really impacted me.
And Chris, you seem to be impacted by your experience like at the Western Wall.
Well, the Western Wall was an experience for sure. I think that the location that impacted me the most, though, was the Mount of Olives. That is it's on the eastern side of the city of Jerusalem. And so from its elevation, you can look across the Kedron Valley and you can see the wall that goes around the eastern side of Jerusalem. You can see the Temple Mount with the Dome of the Rock and this big gold roof in the background. You can see all of these things. And there's a gate on the eastern side of the wall. And so when Jesus would come and make his approach to Jerusalem, he would come down that slope and past the Garden of Gethsemane into the Kidron Valley and up the other slope and go into the city of Jerusalem through the Eastern Gate. And so it was just an amazing, you could stand there and you could view the city and you could just take deep into yourself what that walk must have been like on that last day when he went, knowing his fate and his destiny, and entered the city for the last time. And wept over it too, by the way. That's what the scriptures are.
See, I don't know, you and I being guys, okay? I think our experience as we perceive things or approach things are a little different, maybe. I used to teach history, and I taught, so this is not a good comparison, but I used to always teach about Custer's last stand in class, year after year. And I kind of became interested in military campaigns and Custer and the frontier and the war with the Indians and all that kind of stuff. And a few years ago, it was actually during COVID, we finally stopped. I had driven by the sign, but it never stopped. And so we finally stopped and visited the Battle of Little Bighorn. And my reaction to it was totally unexpected. To see they got the individual graves marked, and you can follow how the battle developed and where Custer met his end. And then there's the memorials and the descriptions and so on. And the visitor center was closed because of COVID. But you just could follow the ridge, and then you could see the area where the Indians had been camped and how they came up. And you just picture that, the Indians coming up on horseback, you know, the cavalry totally outnumbered. And you're thinking, what must have gone through their minds at that moment as these guys are coming and no help is coming, you know? And so that made it so much real. You know, I could be book smart, but then to actually experience made me a little more, I don't know if we want to use the word street smart, but, you know, reality set in, and it was just very moving. And it sounds like that's very similar to what your experience was.
To kind of segue off what you just said, so Jesus went to the Garden of Gethsemane to pray on that night of his arrest, and he could have seen from that location and his accusers coming out of the city, out of the Eastern Gate, down the Kidron Valley, their torches and the crowd all making their way to arrest him. Now, his disciples wouldn't have seen it because they were asleep. But Jesus, praying, could have looked across the Kidron Valley and seen his accusers and those who were going to arrest him and also crucify him, coming to arrest him. And, of course, to Judas, one of his own, who was going to betray him with a kiss. But he could see that event beginning to unfold. And it was powerful, absolutely powerful.
Now, you mentioned your experience specifically with the Church of the Holy Sepulchre.
The Church of the Holy Sepulchre is it's a church that has three different denominations that are all included in the same place. They kind of all claim it together. And so they've worked out an agreement where the center is Roman Catholic and the right-hand side is the Greek Orthodox.
And then the
left side's the Armenian. And it's very interesting. I had never experienced anything like that, but it's supposed to be where the body of Christ, where they brought the body of Christ and then he was entombed there. And it's a very religious site and a lot of religions come and it's one of their most holy sites. I looked at it more as a kind of a place to go see with all the pretty shiny things in it. And a lot of iconography and lots of things. But for the most part, I think it's a real testimony to those people of those faiths. But to me, it was like, I'd rather be outside.
Okay.
And peered in through the tomb where Jesus was supposed to have been laid. And I looked in, bent over, looked in, and went, gosh, he's not there. And it's like, duh.
Unfortunately.
And it's the foundation of our faith. He's alive. He's risen. Why do you look for the dead among the living? You know?
It came home to roost right there.
Right there. Yep. It was like, what are we doing?
Now, you had to go through like a little dress code?
Oh, yeah.
What's that mean?
You found out at the end of the day's activities, they would give you a little information time and you would be told what you needed to wear the next day. And if you were going to a Catholic or a Muslim or Islam kind of site or the Orthodox, you had to have your shoulders covered and covered below your knees. Your legs had to be covered. So there's a lot of things to get to see some of these places that are you required because of their religious traditions to do. And you do it out of respect. You can always have an attitude, but I look at it like I'm doing it to respect what they call respectful, for them. And I understand it that way. But one of the things I felt was really important was that they are doing everything that will prove the Bible they are digging up in Israel right now. There was so much archaeological sites and places that we went to that they have dug up and proved exactly what the Bible says. And it's all underneath, same way with the Western Wall, the Whaley Wall. We went clear down underneath there and saw the walls of Solomon's Temple and all the stuff that's done and the things that they find in the park that proves all this stuff from Pontius Pilate it goes clear back to the time of Abraham and Lot. They have dug these things up. And so the Bible is the history, and the Bible is being proven every single day, and as they go lower and lower in their archaeological digs. And to me, that was amazing. And it was amazing also when Chris was talking about when we were over on the Mount of Olives and looking back at the Eastern Gate. I thought I was going to have a problem with it's not the way it was when Jesus was there, because all this stuff is built up. What they have done to keep Jesus from coming back, because they know the scriptures the same as we do, is they've turned the whole Mount of Olives into one big cemetery. It's nothing but a bunch of tombs and things, except for the places they've carved out and left the olive trees. But it's just sepulchres, tombs, the whole hillside. And they have totally walled up the Eastern Gate, so he cannot come back in to the...
They think they can stop him.
They think they can stop him, and they've... There's blocks all filling up, though you can see the outline of the Eastern Gate, but they have totally blocked it step. And we had the opportunity also to go up onto the Temple Mount and to the Dome of the Rock and right there all around that stuff. And that's where Jesus had pushed over the tables and all that. And we were walking on those same stones. That in itself going up there was like right, and did that the day before we left on the trip to come home. And It was so powerful to see, just like the culmination of everything coming together from Islam to the Jewish. It's like this Dome of the Rock thing was set there. I saw it like the top of a perfume top that just needed to be picked up and taken off, because it was set there to cover up something that was so dear to the Christians and dear to the Jewish people. It's like they were, for me, I almost felt like, well, this is just kind of a squatter kind of thing. And that's probably not a good thing to say. But at the same time, that's the conflict that's going on there all the time. And the Jewish people are so patient in how they deal with this. They are the ones that are the policemen for the Temple Mount. And the nation of Jordan is the one that says who gets to come in and out and the hours that it's open and the times that Israeli people can be there and the times that the Muslim. I mean, it's just amazing the way the politics work. But at the same time, you know, it's one of the most holy places to God when you're up there.
And so to maintain the peace and everybody get along, there's a certain almost, I don't know, forced cooperation.
Yeah.
Just, okay, just to get along. Here we are. This is it. Yeah.
Why don't you tell them about that? The group of Israel Jewish zealots, that they have 2 hours a day that the Jews can go up there. Right?
Yeah, I don't know all the details of that. The Temple Mount is one of Israel's holiest sites. Why is the Temple Mount a holy site? Because that's where the temples were built. And so Solomon built the first temple, and it was destroyed by the Babylonians. And a second temple was built and expanded by King Herod, and that was destroyed by the Romans in 70 AD. And so these were the holy sites where they made the sacrifices, where they had the Ark of the Covenant, where they had the Holy of Holies, and the place where God dwelt among his people. And so it was the holiest of holy sites. Well, when the Romans destroyed it in 70 AD, then the Muslims, after a period of time, swept in, occupied Jerusalem, and they put this dome over the rock. There's actually a rock there.
The rock is Mount Moriah.
The rock is the top of Mount Moriah.
So there's just so much overlaying.
It's on top.
But I don't even mean physically. I mean the story, spiritually, different layers.
That's why David built the first city there, because the city of David was built around Mount Moriah, which was the spot that Abraham was offered up.
And so the Muslims occupied it, and they put this shrine over the top of the rock that was the foundation of the Jewish temple. And so that's like the major insult. You know, the holiest of Jewish sites now has a Muslim shrine on it. During the Crusade, evidently the Crusaders occupied Jerusalem. They put a cross on top of the shrine and turned it back to Christian. But then the Muslims were again occupied and put it back to be a Muslim shrine.
Actually, Ishmael was brought up there by Abraham.
So it wasn't Isaac that was offered at that site. It was Ishmael that was offered at that. But the whole thing is just crazy, because when Israel became a state in 1948, immediately they went to war. And they finally had their peace in 1949, and they marked Israel's new boundaries, and they called it the Green Line. Well, that Green Line actually cut off Old Jerusalem, the Mount of Olives, the Garden of Gethsemane, cut it off from the Israels even going into it. And so they couldn't even get to the holiest of holy sites. They couldn't get to the Mount of Olives. They couldn't, because it was in Jordanian control. And it wasn't. And there was barbed wire across the old city and checkpoints. And the Israelites couldn't, the Jews couldn't even go to the holy place, the Western Wall. They couldn't get to the Western Wall. But then there was a 1967 war. It's called the Six-Day War. And the Jews took back all of Jerusalem, drove Jordan all the way back to the Jordan River, and established new boundary lines. Took down the barbed wire fences, and now they can go to their holy sites. Except for the Temple Mount, which they left in Jordanian control. That's the craziest thing I have ever heard of. But that's the way it is. Politically, that's how it works. And so when Larry was talking about all these shoes, no feet, you go around the Western Wall up to the top of the Temple Mount, and here are shoes, 100 shoes laying there. We're going, what the heck is all this about? And our tour group went up on top. We're up on top of the Temple Mount. It's a big flat plaza with ancient rock steps and walkways, and we're standing there, and our guide is explaining something, and we hear coming in the background this giant commotion of people. They're singing, dancing, and clapping, and speaking out, and there's Israeli military guards in front, and there is Israeli military guards behind them, and they're coming across this plaza barefoot, and they are just loud and making a commotion, and we're all, you know, looking all bug-eyed at them, like, what the heck is that? Well, you can't go to the rock, the Dome of the Rock. Jews cannot pray there. It's forbidden. So they walk across the plaza, turned, and with their faces facing the Holy of Holies, they backed off of the Temple Mount. Now, I don't know where they went.
Little kids, whole families.
To a staging area. And so we ask our guide, what is this group? And he goes, well, that's a sect of the Jewish...
The Zealots.
Called the Zealots. And he says, you would think that the armed guards were to protect them from the Muslims, but no. The armed guards are with them, so they don't do anything that causes the next war, like charge the Dome of the Rock and do something provocative. And so it's this fine tension that exists today. But when I went to the Western Wall, the Wailing Wall, which in itself is just a spectacle and a sensory overload, because there's just so much going on when people are praying and they're rocking back and forth, and there's some boldly standing there reading from the Torah. And we were there on a Monday, and it was the day that you bar mitzvahs there. And so that's a coming of age for young men and young girls. And they are reading scrolls, and they're singing, like, throwing things in the air, and they're hauling old relics out, and they're carrying them across the plaza. And of course, we're there to pray as well. And I put my forehead against the Western Wall and prayed for an extended period of time. And one of the things they do is they take scraps of paper and you write your prayer on it. You press it into the mortar lines of the stone foundation wall. And so there's just little scraps of paper all over the place. I don't know whether those prayers get old or removed.
When they bury them on the Mount of Olives, they have a place and take every night they sweep them up, take them and put them in a place at the Mount of Olives.
So I found myself, I just pulled up a chair and just watched the show because it was just
crazy. Yeah.
It's just crazy. And the other thing is that Yasus, if we were ever afraid, everywhere you went, there were young men and women carrying rifles. They all had them slung. Whether they were in uniform or not in uniform, they were an armed state prepared for whatever came next. So it was amazing.
But you still felt the peace of God.
Oh, I mean, yeah, fearful of them.
But yet at the same time, the peace of God is so tangible.
Yeah.
And going up to Jerusalem is like going out of Coeur d'Alene up to the 4th of July Pass. That's what I equated it to. It's like that trek that you make and you're going up and up to the 4th of July Pass.
Yeah, usually, you know, when you say you're going up, you're going north, right?
Yes, yes.
Well, that's not Jerusalem. Jerusalem is up. It's elevated. And so Jesus went up to Jerusalem, but he had to go south to go up. And so it's elevated and it's amazing. And, you know, the history of it is incredible. The walls that were built around it. Yeah.
Now,
it's pretty crazy.
On the opposite linear line of this, we have Christmas coming up. We're talking a lot about Jerusalem and the death of Jesus and the resurrection. But did you go to visit Bethlehem where he was born?
Yeah.
Oh, we did.
And?
Well, here's the story about Bethlehem. Again, it's just a political crazy.
It's in Islamic hands.
Territory. Our tour guide, we took the same bus, but our tour guide could not take us there because he was Jewish. And so we had to pick up another tour guide when we got to Bethlehem because it's under PLO occupation and authority. And so you just go, what the heck? It's only 45 miles.
And he was a Muslim that had converted to Christianity but still moved to Bethlehem, which they can't because there's...
I would guess from every place we were at in Israel, we could see the border between countries that are joining. And we could see the fencing, and we could see the checkpoints, and we could see the signs that warned of the minefields behind the fences. That's how small a country is. You could see all of this as we toured the country. But going to Bethlehem was just nuts. I mean, it's a ding. They build churches over all the holy sites. And so here we had to go into a church that was run by
Catholics,
Christians, and Armenian Christians.
Yeah, they both all have claim there as well, but it's not as pronounced. Are you sure that's the case for them?
Yeah.
And it's so, not as pronounced as...
Oh, my gosh. It's, how do you get three Christian organizations to agree on anything?
No.
And yet somehow they share this Holy of Holy sites. And again, down under the depths we went to see where Jesus was born and to see the manger that he was laid in. And
how secure do you feel that is actually authentically historically accurate, that spot?
Well, it's funny you should ask it.
Maybe I shouldn't have.
As I'm bending down, looking into this manger where they profess that Christ was laid, one of the other of our group bent down with me and looked in and said, well, how do they know he was laid here? Tradition?
It's true. There's so much tradition connected.
Yeah.
So you trust your tour guide, pretty much.
Our tour guide really didn't, I don't say thought that that was.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No.
Where Christ actually, it was in the area, everything's called like Tel Aviv. Tel just means a civilization piled upon a civilization piled upon, you know, the rubble of the rocks, the next one of them, that's what Tel means in Hebrew. And so there's the whole country is just built upon. That's why as they're starting to dig back down again, they're finding the truths of these things that happened and evidences of everything that the Bible said. But it's the same way as how do you know for sure? Because things have changed so much.
By faith.
Yeah, by faith, yeah. I know.
Tradition.
Was close to or wherever, but if it was, say, exactly this spot, I don't know.
Everything in Israel is old. I mean, no, that's not correct. Everything is old, but to them, old is like the Roman occupation, which ended in 550 AD. But all the rest of it is ancient. And ancient goes back to 4,000 to 6,000 years BC. And so America, 350 years old, compared to 4,000 years old, that's a lot of layers of civilization.
Interesting. So, is there, on a trip like this, you run into tourist traps? Any tourist traps?
Oh, yeah, Bethlehem was a
tourist trap. Bethlehem was a tourist trap. Huh? Oh, okay.
Yeah, we were ambushed.
It's an Islamic quarter, too, and they're much more
aggressive. No, the new tour guide, our first stop was a gift shop.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so we spent 45 minutes in the gift shop before we ever continued on to see what we actually come there to see.
You could actually buy thongs that Jesus wore.
Or
sandals, maybe I should say. Yeah, I'm sorry, sandals.
See, no thongs.
I don't want to buy no thong.
They wouldn't allow them on tip.
No.
Okay. You know, how could it not be? You know, we say tourist trap, but how about a pilgrim trap?
Okay.
Yeah, the sign was in Bethlehem with the pilgrimage.
Yeah. And so it leads to the little nobler, I think. But there are always entrepreneurs who want to capitalize on the attraction of so many people. And I guess I can't find fault with that.
It's always been that way.
Yeah, but it's always been that way. I mean, it is a amazing place that if you get a chance to go, you need to take the trip. And because your heart will be changed, the word will come alive, and your faith will be built. And so I see why so many go.
Yeah. Now, I got to ask this question because I have a personal interest in this because of a movie I saw many years ago. Did you get to go to Masada?
Absolutely. That's amazing.
Tell us about Masada.
Well, you can see Masada from...
What was Masada?
50 miles away as the highway goes towards...
The destruction of the temple by the Romans.
In 72 AD.
These people took off and they went to a place... It's not far from where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. Those are all in the same kind of area.
South part of the country in the desert.
And they created a fortress and a place to live that was from the Romans on top of this flat, high plain. I mean, it's high. You have to take a cable car to get to the top. We had some people in the group that were ex-military that did the walk from the bottom to the top. I was not going to be.
That sounds like something that our pastor would do.
Yeah. He didn't. I think he thought about it. I think he said something about yeah, he should do that, but he didn't.
Because Brandon's our pastor at our church. So that's a physical challenge.
It's like one of those bucket list things that people do that are climbers and stuff, if you do Masada. So
it's called the sneak trail. It just sneaks its way up to the top. And that's, of course, how the ancients had to get up there.
Yeah, they didn't have cable cars then. Don't think so.
Is that the place that Herod had built a temple to? Or a
palace or something?
A palace on the one side of it afterwards, after Masada was...
And greatly enlarged it.
Yeah.
But no.
But you can still see the Roman siege wall that comes from it's the western side. And you can see the outlines of where the Roman camp was when they came to invade the people of Masada, and that's when, I don't know if you watched the movie.
Yes, I loved that. Yes, that was back in the 70s or 80s. It was an awesome movie, guys. Go out, check it out, and watch it.
The places that they stored their food and how they did that. Their water system was amazing. How they had their civilization. Water was the one thing. It was, what did our guide was like, I felt like I had been in a college class for 2 weeks. I mean, we learned so much. Our head just as little would. Because all the time we were taught by a guy that was probably about 15, 20 years younger than us, but he knew his stuff, and he was Israel, and his hand was there. But we felt like we'd been in college classes.
Because he not only spoke at every site, it was as the bus traveled, he was always giving us a dialogue about the geography or about this mountain or all things Israel. And so it was an ongoing revelation teaching.
I got insight that Masada that I never knew. I have to watch the movie, Ted. I haven't watched the movie.
Now, for those of you who have not watched the movie and don't really know the story of Masada, I don't know if I want to give it away for...
Spoiler alert.
But you guys ought to check it out or Google it at least and find out, because it's an amazing story. And that's all I'm going to say at this point, unless you want to go ahead and embellish it.
We have pictures to prove it.
Masada, yeah. Do you have a t-shirt that says I was
at Masada?
I survived Masada?
That'd be cool.
No, it's not really a very touristy place.
You've seen the Dead Sea from there, can't you?
Oh, the view from the top of that was just amazing.
Amazing.
Sea forever and the full Dead Sea and all the way to Egypt. I mean, it was amazing.
And to make sure we all understand, you did not take the snake trail.
Absolutely not.
You took the cable car.
That's it. Move. You're right there.
You cheated.
We did.
You went down that way, too.
Yeah.
Quicker on the downside.
Yeah. Well, it's a fascinating topic, and I'm just so glad you guys could make it. I do see a balance between the two of you. Honestly, Chris, you're like me, a little more geopolitical oriented, okay? And you're a little more spiritual, faith. I mean, I know you're there too, Chris. I know that. But, you know, when you seem to get more animated with the geopolitical part, to me. I mean, you were kind of waving your arms there. Almost gave somebody a black eye.
My gosh.
And then you had to hand over the microphone for a while. I had to get,
no, guy, move in.
Well, you talk with your hand.
Yeah.
Especially like the governor of California or something.
Oh, no. Don't say that. We interrupt this podcast for a murder event. So, let's see. Anything else you want to share? I know you brought some information that I kind of ignored. So I
don't know. It's just so much to take in. It's overwhelming. And I just, we're still in process. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely still in process of what we saw, what we experienced. I mean, we rode camels.
Skip, he was on a camel after that one.
Yeah.
And they're tall.
And we ate fish on the Sea of Galilee, and we walked through the water tunnels from into Bethlehem or into Jerusalem. And we stopped at the Dead Sea Scrolls.
You only go about this deep in the Dead Sea. That's all the further you could, you're blind.
And you are up your waist. Okay.
I just walked in the Dead Sea. I walked in the water there to where I wanted to go because you could just walk in the water.
Not on the water.
No.
We got to keep clarifying that.
Well,
he looked like a roly-poly time ball. He kittens.
I couldn't get my feet under me. I was just floating.
I had to set it back up.
You got a video?
35% saltier than the ocean. So, I mean,
you'll die.
And then we covered ourselves with its black mud. And that's a great picture, and because it's supposed to have some...
We made your skin feel better afterwards, but you know, that we talked about a lot of things that ended up sounding like it was really chaotic, because it was, but like I said, the part that still just causes me to see the wonder and awe of God is the peace that covers everything. No matter how chaotic or where you're at, you still have a sense that God's in this place and God's over this place, and he's the one that has the ultimate say, and he's the one that's in control here. Whether these other factions think they have control, they don't. And that's the overbody part of Jerusalem and of Israel that just amazes me. And I know how special it is to God. I think that's why it's changed me, and it's changed our perspective on things, because it is what the Bible says it is. The Melchizedek, King of Salem, it goes to the beginning of time. I'd find that amazing.
Is there a practice, a habit, a spiritual discipline that you have brought home with you now that you practice and are really aware of and people could see or if they, whatever?
Well, I think we pray for Israel more than we did.
Well, and like even before we left for Israel, I have these morning prayers and evening prayers, and they come from a Jewish tradition, and I've added some things of my own to them. But those have become even more important to me because they focus you back on the things that are important. And you've got Islam 5 times a day blasting their little things a couple times during worship, it will come in and try to blast out the worship, but you know what? We just sang, look over. And so you have to have some traditional things to bring you back and center you. And I think that's one of the things maybe that has become more important to me is that centering yourself on what is the reality of where you're at instead of all the chaos and stuff around you. And that comes from understanding the peace of God that's over Israel. And that's what I think I've taken back.
Now, I want to bring this up because I know about this story a little bit from a practical day-to-day down-to-earth that people who fly can relate to.
Okay.
How did things go with the guitar on the airplane? There's a story there.
Well, the guitar was the wild card for sure. It was the X factor. And Larry was very hesitant to check her, to go into the bottom of the airplane and experience all the extremes in temperature that are associated with that. So we checked it with every flight at the gate. And that's where people would check strollers and wheelchairs and other such items. They don't go in the bottom of the plane. They go, I don't know where they go.
Kind of a place that's closer. But
not out on the wing.
No, some place that's got more temperature control and it's pressurized.
Okay.
But that worked well once we got it down until we got to Israel.
What? Whoa, what happened in Israel?
We went to get off the plane and looked for the little guy that comes and brings in your gate check stuff. And they, no, it goes down. You have to pick that up in the cargo. You know,
and the carousel.
You have to go to the carousel. So my guitar wasn't there when we got to Tel Aviv. And I had put in an AirTag in my guitar. So when I finally was able to connect to the Wi-Fi there at the Tel Aviv there.
On your phone.
I could see that, yes, it was down.
Okay.
So.
You were able to track it down.
I was able to track it down, and it was a pile. It was in a pile of broken strollers and car seats and a bunch of plastic wrap at just sitting there. And so they don't know what paycheck is in Israel. But I got that. But you have to go through all the immigration checkpoints before you could ever get to the carousel. So I'm like starting to freak out a little bit. And I almost start to cry. And I could tell this. And I was by myself because Chris stayed. Remember, you were going one place and I took off the other place to see if I could find my guitar because I could see it on my phone. So it's like I was.
It's here somewhere.
On a mission, so.
A woman on a mission. There you go. And Chris got out of the way.
But one of the Israeli checkpoint immigration people saw me and saw that I was like close to tears. And so they kind of ushered me over to this other line that I thought was going to move quicker.
I got this picture of these Israeli guards with their guns backing off from this American on the television.
And I was afraid, yeah, and calm down. You're going to get yourself in trouble.
I can't caught you, Brian.
Yes, we
went through together.
Calm down.
Calming my words.
Relax. We'll find you.
He was my calm.
He was your rock.
He was.
Yes.
He okay. Was my Mount Moriah.
And when you saw your guitar,
I picked it up as quick as I could.
And hugged it. I'll bet.
And no one else touched it for quite some time.
See, that's a nice little story everybody can relate to. Yeah. Everybody worries about losing their luggage, or a lot of people have lost their luggage, and it's like,
how long? It's the only place I had problems with it, and even getting it out of Israel, I lost all my stuff inside of it, my little gizmos that do the wires and the clippers, and stuff. I forgot to take them out of the guitar case, and they cannot be on the airplane, so all of those got to stay in Israel.
But
everything else worked well all the way home, gate check, but just the last little part of the trip, they don't know how to... Didn't know how to deal with it there, so.
Oh, okay.
Anyway.
By everything went.
Her was covered by the grace of God.
Yeah, everything went.
And so you would go again.
Well, absolutely. I feel like there's other places that we didn't get to go to that were further south. A part of the group that was part of our group had been there a week and a half earlier and had went to Petra and into Jordan and done a whole other separate trip. And then joined ours, and that sounded amazing too. And the Footsteps of Paul is one that would be awesome to go on. This church down there does those as well, so they may even do one of those. So I would love to be able to do that at some point too.
I think, Chris, you need to get another job.
Yeah, I don't know.
Another oil well.
Another oil well, maybe.
Yeah. No, all the accommodations. There was first class, and it was a great group of people. We made some dear friends that we will continue to.
The ones Lynn and Matt that were
And Pastor Dan had been there a number of times, so he knew where to go and what to do.
11 times.
Yeah, so you were really
well. We went with Jack Hayford many times.
10 days gone by.
Poured a lot into Israel. So
it was all.
They loved him over there, and that people loved us. They love America, and we felt welcome wherever we were at by the Jewish people. And same way with even Islam was. Everybody welcomed us. We never felt like they didn't want us there. We felt like they really wanted us there.
But sadly, we had Vice President Vance was there, and then after him was.
Yeah, we fell next door to ours.
You had dinner with him? Did you have dinner with him?
No, but we had a deal. We had to deal with him because they closed off all the road.
Oh.
All the traffic. Well, yeah, so it was a great time to be there, and everything, like I said, everything was just, had the blessing of God on, and we acknowledge that in Rookie.
To wrap this up, if you could tell your friends on the podcast here or at church one thing about how this trip really changed you individually, what would it be?
My understanding of the reality of God and that He is the one that makes places specific, and He's the one that says, Jerusalem is important to me. I centered that is my center. And to not question, and to just believe what God says and believe what the Word of God says. And I have a tangible thing to hold on to now where I didn't before concerning my faith in God and what He's doing and what's going to happen in the days to come. I understand it better because I've seen it and been there. And that has changed. I feel stronger. I feel more courage than I've had before. And peace comes from that. So I came back with more peace and more courage.
That's pretty strong. Chris, you want to follow up that?
No. No.
Ditto. Just say ditto.
It certainly displays the difference between men and women. And where my wife is spiritually minded and I'm more practical minded.
Careful.
And for me, it wasn't as much of an emotional experience as it was a experiential experience, meaning that I now have a firmer grasp of the nation, the prophetic future, the prophetic past. And although, I'm not predicting anything, I'm just saying, one day Jesus is going to crash through that Eastern Gate and make His way to the Temple Mount, and it is going to be a calling together of all the saints, and I am looking forward to that with great expectation, and every day we're closer to it than we were the day before.
We're all going to be there someday.
Yeah.
Wow. What a thought. Isn't that something
for you?
It's got a little crazy. Okay.
Why is this city stuck in this little country so important to
on the top of it?
I don't know, but if it is, it's important to me.
Did you take a lot of pictures? Are you planning a presentation somewhere that with slides and all that?
I was going to do a PowerPoint for Thanksgiving for the family.
Oh, okay. It might not go beyond that.
I don't know what Brandon's planning. He took a lot of pictures. So that might be one to watch if Brandon's going to do. I hope he does a PowerPoint with whatever he does next Sunday. So.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, thanks again, guys. I knew it. We've spent almost an hour and a half here. That's not accurate, but this is. And I hope all of you enjoyed this. If you have any questions for Chris and Larry, you can email me at northidahopodcast@gmail.com. Or, I don't know, can they contact you?
Sure.
And how would they do that?
Email is ccclark2go@gmail.com. And
now two.
It is the number two. So ccclark2go@gmail.com. I'll respond to all email except email.
Oh, Yeah, you can respond to that too in your own way.
Then people way down.
You know, saying
some prayer. And,
you know, well, remember, Jesus overthrew the tables at the temple, so beware.
Yeah.
And if you didn't get that quite right, this is the advantage of a podcast. You can just stop, rewind, listen to it again, write it down carefully and slowly. And guys, you can find me on any maybe platforms, and you can just Google Almost Paradise in North Idaho, and you will find the multiple platforms there that you can choose from that you like the best to listen to any of my now 80, you're by my 87th episode.
Wow.
Congratulations.
That's a good number, too.
Yeah.
Is that a good number? How's that a good number?
8 is new beginnings, and 7 is the spiritual perfection of God, so.
Oh, wow. This is awesome. What a coincidence. See, guys, God works in weird, mysterious ways.
Wow.
Okay. Well, thanks again for coming, and everybody, thanks for hitting the play button. Thanks for listening. And you know what? I am going to have, after they leave and I think about it in a few hours, I'll have my own little personal faithful reflection on this too that I would love for you to listen to later on, okay? So thanks again, and everybody, have a good weekend coming up. Today is Friday.
So long.
There you go. All right. When I think back on my conversation with this couple and their journey through Israel, I'm struck by how two people can walk the same ancient stones and come away touched in very different ways, yet still meet at the same place of wonder. He saw Israel through a geopolitical lens, as so many of us do. A land where history and headlines live side by side, where peace deals and prisoner exchanges unfold in real time. He noticed the tension, the complexity, the fragile balancing act between Jews and Muslims and Christians, who all call that land their own. And as a retired pastor, it's no surprise that he could appreciate the broader picture, how the currents of politics and prophecy run together in that part of the world. It's also an echo of the psalmist's words, "Pray for peace that they shall prosper that love thee." That was in Psalms 122:6. She, on the other hand, felt something more intimate, a spiritual awakening, a stirring of the heart rather than the mind. She brought her guitar, and with it, she brought peace, leading her group in worship songs multiple times a day. In a land often marked by division, she carried something unifying and gentle. Her music felt like a living reminder of Jesus' words, "For where two or three gather in my name, there am I with them." Matthew 18:20. And maybe that's the beauty of the Holy Land. It meets each person where they are. Some feel the weight of history. Some feel the presence of God. Some feel both. But all of them stand on the same ground where Jesus walked, where Jesus taught, where Jesus suffered, where Jesus died, and where Jesus rose. And as the angels declared in Acts 1:11, "This same Jesus will come back in the same way you have seen him go into heaven." Different perspectives, yes, but one Savior, one story, and one incredible reminder that God knows how to speak to each of us in the way that we'll hear him best. Goodbye, everybody. Have a good week, and we'll talk to you again real soon.